Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm traveling this week, and so there won't be a new episode of Amateur Traveler, but I would like to bring you one of these episodes from our archives, which I think you will enjoy. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no. Amateur Traveler, episode 589. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about volcanoes and beaches, gillies and waterfalls, surfing and secret islands as we go to Lombok in Indonesia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Lombok. I'd like to welcome back to the show Jason Andrew Jenkins from anepiceducation.com, travel blogger and podcaster. I say welcome back to the show because he was our guest way back, not all that long ago, on episode 550, talking about Tokyo. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be here again. Thanks, Chris.
And in between time, we've met in person in San Miguel de Allende when we just both happened to be there at the same time, had a chance to sit down together and just shoot the breeze with a couple of the travel bloggers and podcasters, which is always great fun. But we're not talking about either of those places today. Where are we talking about?
Today, we're going to talk about Lombok, the island of Lombok in Indonesia.
Okay. And let's put it on a map, first of all. I'm not sure that everybody can find Indonesia on a map, but we're in the Western Pacific.
That's right.
In between the Pacific and the Indian Ocean. But where is the island of Lombok?
Usually the way I tell people to locate Lombok is most people have heard of Bali.
Yep.
And Bali is the island directly east of Bali in the sort of archipelago of Indonesia, which is more or less near the center of the Indonesian islands. And that's where it is, right next to Bali.
Okay. And right next to Bali, and then also not that far from the island that Jakarta is on, and the name of that island escapes me for the moment.
Java.
Java.
That's right. You have Java. Actually, I said it was near the center. It's actually not near the center. I wasn't considering Sumatra, which is the largest of the islands and another interesting place to explore. But you have Java, which is the largest of the Indonesian islands that rubs up against peninsular Malaysia.
Right.
Then if you follow it east, you hit Jakarta and the island of Java. Next to Java, you have Bali. And then right after Bali, a little further east, you have Lombok.
Okay. Well, and people have heard about most of those islands we're talking about, except potentially Lombok. Why are we talking about Lombok?
Well, for one, I guess we're talking about it because I just spent 5 weeks there with my family a couple months ago. We've spent a good deal of time in various parts of Indonesia. We'd heard good things about Lombok. And the reasons I would suggest going is, especially for those who have been to Bali, feel that it's becoming overdeveloped and maybe in all the baggage that comes with that, Lombok is a simpler place. It's less developed, even though it is starting to gain tourism dollars. It's a little sleepier, but it still has a lot of the same charm and the natural wonders of what you would find in Bali. Now, as you know, and many of your listeners probably know, Bali is a Hindu island smack in the middle of Indonesia, which is a predominantly Muslim country.
Right.
Lombok is not. Lombok is a Muslim island nation. Maybe island nation is too strong a word, but I mean, before Indonesia was a country, all of these islands had their own distinct cultures, their own distinct ethnic tribes as well. And so that element of Lombok we found to be very interesting to have. It has a touch of the tropical paradise that Bali is, but it comes from a completely different cultural background.
Well, and I don't know the history of the country of Indonesia, but I'm guessing that it was conglomerated during the colonial period under the Dutch.
That's true.
Okay.
With my also limited knowledge of that, these were all their own countries, but then the Dutch spice merchants and colonists made it into one place. As far as I know, there are still tensions between one part of Indonesia and another, and very vast cultural and linguistic differences between them. For example, on Lombok, the predominant ethnicity is the Sasak people, and Sasak has their own language, their own food, their own customs that you would not find in, say, Sumatra or Java or any of the other islands.
Okay. What kind of itinerary do you recommend for Lombok?
Well, I know you like to kind of give a week-long itinerary.
I'll give you a week or 2 weeks since we're going someplace relatively remote here.
I'll give you an ambitious week or perhaps a solid two-week itinerary. I think most people would fly into Lombok, even though you can also, I should say that a lot of people take speedboats or slow boats over from Bali. It's that close.
Okay.
We're talking 20 minutes, 30 minutes on a speedboat or less.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's very close. I would start in the Senggigi area, which is to the west. The airport is in sort of the southwestern region. Senggigi Beach is a beach area to the west of the island. And then Kuta, not to be confused with Bali's Kuta, but there is a Kuta area to the south of the island. Both of these have exceptional snorkeling, surfing, scuba diving. I think that would be probably the easiest place to start if you just want to have some laid-back beach time.
Okay. I'm guessing if we don't want some laid-back beach time, we probably shouldn't be spending our time going all this way to Indonesia, that's part of what you come here for.
I would think so. We certainly do. May seem kind of strange, especially if we started talking travel. We've lived in a lot of islands and beach areas. We're not actually big beach people.
Like, okay.
We burn easily, and I'm talking about my family, because we travel together all the time. I burn easily, the sun and sand and all of that. But I love beaches at night, but we're big water people. My kids love to surf. My kids like snorkeling. And as I'm sure I'll mention in this interview, they both got their junior paddy scuba diving lessons during this trip. And there's all of those kinds of things. While you're in the Senggigi area, speaking of kind of water, one of the things that we really like to do more than salt water is we like fresh water. We like streams and waterfalls.
Okay.
And Lombok is just riddled, just like Bali in a lot of ways, lots of beautiful tropical waterfalls in rainforests. And they're reachable. You can hire a driver, or as we do, we rent scooters, and with all the risks that entails. And I could get into that if you needed to.
We probably should. Yeah, we probably should, because it's good that you know that, but I'm not sure that everybody who rents scooters understands that there are some risks involved in scooter travel. We're not saying you shouldn't do it, but you should be aware of it. So when you say you rent scooters with all the risks involved, tell me a little more about your thought process. You're traveling with two kids, as I recall, a wife and yourself.
Right.
And you're on two scooters, four scooters, one scooter in the typical Indonesian way.
In Vietnam, we were all four on one scooter.
Well, there we go.
But when we are in most places, it's better to have two scooters and one parent and one child.
Okay.
I think what you're getting at is traffic in Southeast Asia is a little hectic. It doesn't follow all the rules. Stoplights and things like that are just suggestions.
Yeah, that's right.
There are parts of Indonesia that I would not ride a scooter in. Sumatra, we have never ridden a scooter, at least in northern Sumatra where we've been, because the roads were in poor condition. Plus, there's lots of construction equipment, you know, logging trucks. You don't want to have to be run off the road, those kinds of things. Now, that being said, in Lombok, just like in Bali, the roads are in pretty good condition. And if you have experience riding scooters in this kind of environment, I would recommend it. That being said, a lot of travel insurance companies will not cover any sort of accidents or damages if you do not have a scooter or a motorcycle license in your home country.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You need to be prepared. Now, I should also say that a lot of accidents, maximum is going to be $50, $100. These scooters don't cost that much. But the damage, if you get injured or if you know, someone you need, it's a crazy environment, and you need to have some experience doing that. I know lots of gap year backpackers come over, and some of them get hurt. Usually it's just some scrapes on the legs. That's how I learned in my 20s in Taiwan. But I've been riding in these sort of environments for a while, so we enjoy it, and I certainly would encourage people to do it. But, for example, one waterfall that we went to was along a large major road that had a very limited shoulder, and I would say, don't ride to this one. But the Sengigi area where we started is a wide two-lane road that follows the coast. It's gorgeous. It's open. Turns are easy to see around. In these kind of environments, I think even less experienced riders would enjoy it.
Well, and we should say we haven't talked topography of the island yet, but this is, like the neighboring Bali, a volcanic island, I gather.
That's right.
Which, and Bali is really noticing that right now as people can't land planes because the volcano is active right now. In fact, while we're talking, you may or may not be able to fly into Lombok because of the neighboring volcano, but by the time this comes out, that may be all past. So definitely check into that before you book your trip.
It's not a live volcano in that there's no lava, but it's not a dormant volcano either. There's bubbling sulfuric
I think that's
activity.
Still considered active.
And it's called Rinjani. It's sometimes called Mount Rinjani or Gunung. Gunung is, I think, the word for mountain. But it is a volcano, and it is in the center north of the island. And that's one of the other places that I would recommend you go. You can do trekking to the top of Mount Rinjani. It's a rough hike. And when I mean rough, I mean if you're an experienced climber, I think you would have a bold challenge. If you're not, this is not easy steps. For example, we chose not to do it because we're with an 11-year-old.
Okay.
And my 11-year-old has done jungle trekking in Sumatra, and she's hiked and climbed in a lot of different places. But
so she can probably do more than I can, is what you're saying.
Perhaps. I don't know if she can do more than I can.
Okay, there we go.
We felt like this could be a little too strenuous and possibly a little perilous in that there are some steep drops. I don't mean to make it out like this is a life or death sort of thing, but I think you should be in shape or at least be prepared for a challenge to do it. When you reach the top, it takes a day. You camp at the top and then you come down and it is cold. That's another reason I should say that we did not particularly do this, even though it's one of the most popular and well-known things to do on Lombok, is we didn't want to pack winter clothes. We didn't want to pack puffy jackets. A lot of outfitters will supply you with sleeping bags and tents and all of that, and they'll carry it up there for you too. But you need to have long johns and a sock hat, and we didn't want to come for that for just one day.
Okay. You're long-term on the road, so you're not carrying your winter wardrobe with you, I gather.
On this particular trip, no.
Yeah.
We didn't have any winter clothes. Well, I should say, and this is something that is a general rule that for Southeast Asia in general, I do think you should still bring some sort of hoodie or sweatshirt and socks because flights can be cold. The boats that you take between places, for example, the boat between Penang and Langkawi is freezing. A lot of Southeast Asian countries, especially Malaysia, but Indonesia too, they love their air conditioning. And we kept fleece and socks to go to the movies when we were living in Penang because it was so cold. So we had a sweatshirt, but we weren't prepared for overnight like this. No.
Okay. We started on itinerary, and then I think I got you off track.
I know. We went from itinerary in Lombok to movie theaters in Penang. I've started off with the beach areas of Kuta and Sengigi. I'm telling you this because I think I'm also recommending activities such as surfing lessons or snorkeling or these things. We've done these and really enjoyed them. Then let's say that the island is a clock and we're moving clockwise.
Okay.
You will head to the northern part. You have three most famous little islands off the coast of Lombok, and these are called gilis. And gilis is a word that comes from the Sasak language, which means little island, and Lombok has hundreds of them, maybe more than hundreds of gilis. So when you hear people talking about going to the gilis, they're frequently talking about the three islands I'm about to talk about, but there are lots of different island hopping trips to various gilis. The most famous of these are in the northwest of the island. There's a boat dock that you jump on boats. You can take, I can talk about accessing them if you like. There's a speedboat and then there's a local boat. The speedboat takes maybe 15 minutes and your feet don't even get wet, and it costs five times the amount of taking the local boat with the local people. Mm-hmm. But these three main islands, the first one is called Gili Air, A-I-R, just like air, then Gili Meno, and then the third one is called Gili Trawangan, which is sometimes truncated to Gili T. And these three islands have a lot of the same sort of surfing and nature and snorkeling and all of these things, and they get more developed. Actually, I won't say they get more developed, they go out. Gili Air, the first one, the closest to the mainland, and Gili T are both fairly populated. Gili Meno in the middle is not, and there are a lot of sea turtle opportunities in this area. And if you want to go to a super quiet beach, you go to Gili Meno. Gili T, the furthest one out, Gili Trawangan, is a lot like Bali or Koh Phangan in Thailand, in that it's full of backpacker shops. There's a vegan coffee shop next to a glass bottom boat place.
This is not undiscovered by tourists, is what you're saying.
This is not undiscovered by tourists, and a lot of tourists from Bali go.
Okay.
It has a reputation as a party island in that, I mean, there are signs on the street saying we sell mushrooms. There are DJs playing at one part of the beach. There's that whole scene.
And when you say we sell mushrooms, they're not just looking for a good reduction of mushrooms and for your
Absolutely.
Burgers.
These are not for pizza.
Okay. These are psychedelic mushrooms here.
So these are psychedelic mushrooms, and there's that whole scene there. I hesitated to go there in that I wondered if it would be a family-friendly scene.
Sure.
I obviously didn't want to hear club music all night while we're trying to sleep or something. But there's a whole other side of the island that I highly recommend. I think it's very easy to go there. The island is not that large. We literally biked around it in a few hours, if that tells you how small it is. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of places to stay there. We stayed in the interior and stayed at a gorgeous villa with our own pool and didn't hear any of that. And then we're able to go and get a pizza if we wanted to get. And when you travel a lot, sometimes it's nice to get a pizza.
Sure.
So there is that scene there. And if that attracts you, then that's a place to go. If it repels you, I can tell you that there's still reasons to go there. And there's other things like cooking classes and jewelry making classes and a lot of opportunities for other kinds of activities, as well as tours and surfing, snorkeling. Our favorite of the three islands is Gili Air, which is the closest one to the shore. Mm-hmm. It takes minutes to get there. It's a happy medium between the isolated Gili Meno and the very crowded Gili T, in that it has lots of beach-facing restaurants. It's quite mellow. It was a great place to walk around. And again, we biked around the island and a few hours, exceptional sunsets. Oh, and perhaps I should mention this. I keep saying that we biked around. There are no cars on these islands.
Oh, okay.
All three have no cars. I noticed this time that local residents now have electric scooters. But aside from that, the main modes of transport are your feet or a bicycle, and you can rent bicycles everywhere. And then something called I don't know if it's a sidomo or a chidomo, which is, it's a horse-drawn cart,
okay.
And these carts will be waiting at the dock to throw your bags in the back and then take you on. The horses are usually decorated with lots of bells and designs, and you can judge for yourself whether their situation is good or bad, but that's the main way that people get around. And there are mosques on these islands, just like there are all over Lombok, so mm-hmm. five times a day, you will hear a call to prayer.
Excellent. Where else are you going to direct us on Lombok?
One of our favorite places was the northern region of Senaru, which is the northernmost part of the island. This is where Mount Rinjani is, and the people in Senaru have their own culture as well. There's some amazing, amazing waterfalls. I'd have to look up the name, but the road that takes you to the trekking point of Mount Rinjani, there is a large double waterfall with a cave underneath that is worth the ride.
And I'm going to guess that might be Sendangile Untukelep waterfall?
Tukelep, that's the one. Yes, thank you. Your fingers work faster than mine. Teocalip. It's a little bit of a hike in. All of these waterfalls require a small fee or quote unquote donation as you're entering. But this one takes a longer hike than others. And when I mean longer hike, I mean 20 minutes, 30 okay. minutes max. And you do have to cross a river. So I would not wear tennis shoes or at least be ready to take them off. You have to walk across a river and there's no rocks to reach it. It's a massive, beautiful waterfall, very cold water and a constant stream of mist to where even in the hottest temperatures, you can actually get cold there. But we're waterfall junkies, so we really, really liked this one. In all of the waterfalls that you'll find in Lombok, there'll usually be some local chaps hanging out asking if you need a guide or possibly even telling you you need a guide. You must have a guide. You really don't. If you want to, you can, and of course you'll be charged for it. But if you are polite and stern or at least committed to your defense that you don't need one, you don't need to take one. The trails are very easily marked. And so sometimes they'll say, well, you need it because you'll get lost. And then you walk along a paved sidewalk down to a waterfall. And it's like, I didn't really need a guide. Some guides do give some local history, give some numbers on flora and fauna. We did one that we thought was worth it. But for most of them, just the style of travel we do, we just decided to do it on our own. There are monkeys in Lombok. Mm-hmm. And not just any monkey, but the macaque.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
I may be unpopular in this position, but I love monkeys, but I do not like macaques. We are not a macaque-loving family. Spending so much time in this area, macaques are very smart and very bold and potentially dangerous, even though we've never experienced ourselves. If you come into contact with macaques, be very careful and don't make eye contact with them. Now, I know some people think, gone to Bali and they've gone to Monkey Forest and they say, oh, these are so sweet. You just need to be careful around macaques, I think. And the best way to ensure that you're not going to have an interaction with a macaque is he's approaching you because he knows you have food. Make sure that your food is not visible. Don't carry dangling, bright colored or sparkly things that dangle off your backpack. Make sure all your food is inside your bags and that'll be the best case. We did see some macaques here and there, but I'm just mentioning that because it just kind of came to my head. Now, while we were in this area, but there's a place here called Rinjani Lodge. They have these villas that overlook a misty cliff. They have amazing infinity pool over that is beautiful to photograph and to swim in. They also have the best restaurant in the area. I mean, everything from traditional Indonesian food to burgers and those things. And if you eat in the restaurant, then you can get in the infinity pool, which is a nice cool down if you've done the Mount Rinjani trek, which I know a lot of people do. They do the trek and then they come down wrecked. They eat at this place and then they take a dip in the pool. But it's a beautiful view over sort of a little valley. Right near the Rinjani Lodge is a local woman named Katni, and she runs, it's called Rinjani Women Adventure.
Okay.
And she's a local woman who wanted to become a trekking guide. And because of the culture of the Sasak people or the people in Lombok, that was not a woman's job. And she sort of pushed her way into this work. And now she hires other local women to do trekking guides. We chose not to go to the top of the mountain, but we took one of her local tours where we went to a Sasak village and then we walked through some rice fields and basically a full day my son and I spent with two of her staff going through villages and through rice fields and basically looked like over a mountain and through the woods kind of thing. It was a great half day. We ate lunch with them and then we came back to our lodging.
Well, the one thing we should say, you talked about it being quite a hike to the top. And then you also mentioned how cold the water was coming down from the mountain. So that made me look up how tall the mountain is. And It is the second tallest mountain in Indonesia, second highest volcano. So it's 12,224 feet or 3,726 meters, if you think in meters instead of feet. It is a good sized mountain. That would be taller than the mountains in almost all the states in the United States, except for two, I believe. Well, no, three, sorry. But that'd be a respectable mountain, especially when you're considering that it's coming up from sea level.
I'm glad you gave that comparison.
when you think about the mountains in Colorado, for instance, they've got 14,000 foot mountains, but they're coming up from 4,000 or 5,000 feet is where the base of the mountain is. That's where Denver isn't quite a mile high. It's only a mile high in one spot, but it's basically a 14,000 foot mountain. It doesn't look as tall there because it's not 14,000 feet above the plain, where this is 12,000 feet above the water. And obviously a lot of it is below the water too. So, I mean, you're talking about a pretty good sized mountain.
You're talking about a good sized mountain. And if you look at the size of Lombok, to know that we were at sea level 20 minutes before we arrived at the trailhead, that kind of tells you how high and how fast you're going. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that we didn't mention is that if you do hike up to the caldera, there is a crater lake inside.
That's right. There's a crater lake, which if you look for image of this later, it's pretty spectacular and was tempting for us to make us want to do it. But after we spoke with some people about it and a level of strain and the fact that we didn't have a cold weather clothes, we chose not to.
Right. Excellent. Where to next?
What we chose to do instead is we actually went with a company that does the Mount Rinjani group. I think they're called Rinjani Fun Trekking, their name, or Fun Rinjani Trekking or something. They offered several different tours. Of course, their main tour is to go to the top of the volcano, but they had an island hopping tour. And whether you go with Rinjani Fun Trekking or some other group, I highly recommend doing an island hopping tour. And this is not just the three gillies that I just told you about there. Like I said, there are hundreds of others. And we chose to go, if you keep going clockwise around the island, if the Rinjani Lodge and that area is at high noon, we're now driving another hour, 2 hours to the east towards maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And there we got on a small boat to go to Gili Kondo. And there's so many gillies, and I can't remember all of their names, but Gili Kondo is where we camped overnight. And Gili Kondo has no civilization. There's like a little shop there that closes in the day and the owner gets on a boat and leaves. But it's just a little sandy island with a few wooden pavilions. We basically went with his company, drove over here, stayed at a boat dock for a little while, had a fantastic bowl of bakso, which we can talk about the food of Lombok at some point. We got on a boat that had a slide, and if you have an 11-year-old girl and have a boat that has a slide built into the top of it, you can imagine her glee.
I'm thinking I know of at least one 56-year-old guy who would find that pretty fun, too.
It's a small wooden boat. And there was a slide from the roof that just went right into the water, which is fantastic.
I should say that on Google Maps, the name of the island is Gili Kondo Secret Island. Now, I'm not sure you can name it Secret Island and have it show up on Google
and
Maps.
And have it on Google Maps. Well, there's several other gillies in the area. Gili Kondo may be the firmest, perhaps I should say, because, and I say that because some of the islands, we went on to one that's only an island for several hours a day. One of the best pictures that we took on this entire trip was where we're standing on sand about the size of a Buick, and it's ocean all around us. That's the island. At high tide, it disappears, and at low tide, it reappears.
I think that's a sandbar is what we call those.
Well, they call it an island. Take that or leave it.
That sounds more like a secret island to me, but
that's more of a secret island for sure. Then there was an island that was covered in mangroves, and then there was another that was excellent for snorkeling, and the boat putters from one to the other, and we jump out and explore. Then we into Gili Kondo, and there's a team of five guys. They've loaded all the tents and sleeping bags and food for the day, and we spent the night there, had chicken curry, had fish that my son actually, you know, listeners can tell if you want to do this or hand this to your own child, but one of the guides had a spear gun. A makeshift spear gun. I think the actual propulsion came from an inner tube from a bicycle, but he had a spear gun and he was going to catch fish. And my son's like, oh, please, please let me go with him. And they caught some of our dinner right off a few meters off of the sand near where we were camped. They cooked all the meals. They cleaned up, set up the tents for us, disassembled the tents. We had a fantastic time. In fact, that night, my son and I kind of hung out with the main leader guide and the other guys as they were playing a game called Remy, which we found out is like a Lombok or an Indonesian form of rummy.
Okay.
Whoever's losing on points they had to dangle this huge piece of coral off of their ear. They said they usually do it with a water bottle, but this was a piece of coral about the size of a coconut, and they tied a string and made whoever's losing on points has to have it hanging off of their ear until they get their points up. But anyway, it was a great team. That was easily one of the best memories we had because it felt like adventure, and it felt very exotic in a way, and far, far away from the crowds of Bali or Gili Tea.
Excellent. You have hinted at food a couple times here. Do we want to do a little more itinerary first, or do we want to get to food?
We did scuba lessons with Dive Zone, which is on Gili Air. There are diving outfitters on all three Gilis, and I'm sure there are dive outfitters on the main island of Lombok, but we had a good experience with Dive Zone. We had a German instructor who had just moved there but had been training for, I think she'd been a dive instructor for like 6 years. She was obviously good with kids, which was important to us. Mm-hmm. And then they were able to go out and have three dives. Two of the dives were good. One dive had pretty poor visibility. But this was to get your license, which is not that interesting. You have to sit and watch lots of videos. You have to answer tests. Yeah. You have a lot of knowledge to get. And it was a lot for an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old. But they wanted to do it, and I think because of their style, their teaching style, it worked. And they in a lot of these places, in, you know, Dive Zone and many, many others, they have a pool on site. Mm-hmm. You learn how to use the gear in the pool,
right,
and then you go out on the second day. We took surfing lessons near Sengigi, Waiaka surfing, which good with teens, good with adults.
Now, had any of you surfed before?
I had tried surfing in Mexico about 5 years ago. My son and my daughter have taken lessons in multiple places. They've taken them in, but they don't surf on a regular basis. They took some lessons in northern Spain, then in Canary Islands, and then I think this was the third place. So they have experience on a board, but they are not experienced surfers.
Okay.
And one of the things that I liked about this group is that they seem to be quite personable in that, for example, one of the guides kept getting my daughter's name wrong. He kept calling her Alicia, and her name is Felicia. And she finally went, actually, it's Felicia. And he then constantly tried to use her name. And then even when we walked through town, he would shout to her, hey, Felicia, I see you, you know, that kind of thing. So they had obviously knew that to spread the word, you need to put on a friendly face. And these are young guys, 16-year-old, 18-year-old, 20-year-olds. And they were really good and really professional.
Very good. Food. You've mentioned a couple times.
Indonesian food in general, two dishes that you will find on a regular basis are nasi goreng, which is literally just fried rice, and mie goreng, which is fried noodles. You'll find those all over Lombok as well, along with lots of great seafood. If you like seafood, you'll be able to find shrimp, lobster, lots of different kinds of fish. Fried, baked, lots of different ways. And tempeh as well, which is kind of a soy-based solid food. I'm not sure how to put it, but I like it. My kids don't. You'll find all of these things as well as some green vegetables and corn. Now, I bring all this up because Lombok food is very spicy. And this is coming from a guy who loves spicy food. It's not as nuanced as Thai food can be or Malaysian food. It's basically just serrano chilies and soy a lot of times, at least in our experience in there in 5 weeks. And when you ask for it to not be spicy, it comes completely plain. This happened at least a dozen times. We would order a fish and we would say, no spicy, which is for your listeners who are going to Indonesia, tidak pedas. Tidak pedas is how you say no spicy or no chili. And we would tell them that and then bring the food. And there was not even salt or anything on it. It would just be baked completely plain. So that's one sort of agreement you have to make. Now, some places, if they have certain menus, you just need to make it clear. But in our experience, you'll get it either dipped in chilies and cooked or not dipped in anything. The food is certainly good if you like spices.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other dishes that I wanted to mention. Bakso. Mm-hmm. Bakso is a meatball soup, usually chicken. Remember, we're in a Muslim country, so you're not going to be getting pork chops, bacon here. It'll be either beef or chicken. And bakso is sort of a meatball soup. You'll find stands everywhere you go. It usually comes with sort of some rice noodles, sometimes with bean sprouts. Recipes vary. And then there's all sorts of spices that you can put on the side. In beach towns like San Gigi and Ongiliti, if you want to eat organic gluten-free cheesecake, you can find it. But if you want to eat local food, bakso will be around, and it's infinitely cheaper than that burger.
I was going to say, I would assume that if we're eating more local food, we're also eating at half the price.
At least half the price.
Okay.
The Western food that we did eat was lacking. Now, we weren't going to the fanciest restaurants. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are high-end dining places on all of these areas, and we weren't going in there. We're budget traveling at this time. So I'm sure that you could probably find an exceptional steak or lasagna or something like that in some places. But the places where we're going, where they're playing the Aussie rules football on the TV, and it's more of sort of a bar, they did have spaghetti and burgers, but it was nothing that I wanted to pay five times the price for.
Okay.
So you have bakso, and these can be served in a restaurant or in little carts that kind of wander the streets. Another is called nasi bungkus. Nasi bungkus is like a fried rice, and various things could be in it, chicken or fish, peanuts, usually some peanuts, maybe some dried fish, often chili, so it could be spicy. And it's wrapped into a leaf cone and then wrapped and then sealed with a stick. And you'll find these on roadsides. You'll find people selling these right in front of the pizza places on Gili T or right in front of the pasta place in San Gigi. And so we ate quite a few of those. But I would say that the food variety in Lombok is not as diverse as you would find in Bali or in other places in Southeast Asia. It was a lot of mee goreng, a lot of nasi goreng, lots of fried rice, fried noodles. But the grilled fish was excellent.
Okay. Weather, you're tropical here. You're just a little south of the equator. You went what time of year?
We were there from mid-April to the end of May.
Okay, so that would be before the monsoon season, which starts in mid to late, I say summer, but that's a strange concept when we're talking about an equatorial area, mid to late July or August.
We didn't have the monsoon season, but we did have some rain though.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of Southeast Asia, there'll be a storm that comes in and it's God's wrath for 90 minutes and then it stops.
Right.
One time we actually got trapped at one of the waterfalls. And when I say trapped, meaning we could have left. We just didn't want to walk the trail in pelting rain. One time it rained really hard in Gili T, in Gili Trawangan. That's another nice thing about renting the bicycles, because after this rain, there is ankle deep water everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're going to be walking through that. And so it's best sometimes to kind of just bike over it than to have to walk through it. There are some sidewalks, but most of the gillies, they're not even paved. There's just sand. And we didn't bring shoes and we didn't miss having shoes at all.
Okay. And actually, it sounds like I'm a little wrong here. The wet season, what I'm seeing is between October and April.
Okay. So that makes sense, because most of the rain was at the beginning of our trip.
Mm-hmm. With the rainfall occurring in short, heavy bursts, as we just said.
There's some pretty heavy rainfall, which, link back to the discussion of riding scooters, you need to be prepared for that. I highly recommend bringing a poncho.
Sure.
Whether you're on a scooter or not, I highly recommend bringing a poncho, but especially if you're bringing a scooter. And then also, I have a pair of, I call them hipster glasses. They look like glasses, but they're just clear glass.
Okay.
And I bring these because there's a splatter off of the car's tires in front of you when you're riding. You don't want something to get in your eye when you're riding in the rain. And so I carry those in my backpack, and when it starts to rain, I put them on so that I don't have to worry about getting some mud in my eye when I'm in traffic.
Excellent. Any other warning you would give besides what to wear here?
This is sort of a general in Southeast Asia that I've talked about somewhere else before. The tourism industry is developing here, where mm-hmm. in places like Thailand and Bali, it's obviously there. People are going to get more and more cynical and more greedy. Not all people, but some people. And you'll likely have to deal with someone like that. If you've been in Southeast Asia, you've had that before, where a little kid wants to sell you postcards or a little old woman wants to sell you a fan. And sometimes people can get pushy. I think the worst thing for you to do is to be rude to these people. I think the best thing to do, and what I've used all over Southeast Asia and what I saw work in Lombok as well, is make eye contact, smile, a genuine smile, and say no. And what I mean by this is ignoring them doesn't help. Shouting at them and telling them to shove off doesn't help. But if you show them just a little bit of respect and say, I know you're just trying to make a living, but I don't want it, in a convincing no. Eye contact, smile, and no. And usually they'll just move on. They know you're not going to do it, so they're going to go look for another mark. And so that worked for us in Lombok and as well as many, many other places. And when we were talking about scooters, if we're going to go back to scooters, anytime you rent a scooter, I guess anywhere in the world, but in Southeast Asia as well, always make sure to take photos of any scratch or dent before you leave.
Sure.
Make sure that everybody knows so that before you get on. A common scam in some parts of Southeast Asia and elsewhere is there's some dent and then they say, you did this, you have to pay for this or something like that. So just make sure that everyone is in agreement. Usually they have a little diagram of the scooter and then they draw little circles on where the dents are, just like you would when you get a rental car.
Right.
But make sure to have photo evidence of that so that you just make sure.
Excellent. One thing that surprised you about Lombok.
Well, I guess it was sort of the dichotomy. We'd lived in Malaysia a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
Malaysia is a great place, but it's sort of a modest society in certain ways.
Sure.
And to see sort of the dichotomy of hearing club music in bikinis while the call to prayer is playing on Gili T was a strange dichotomy. I think the food, just the level of chilies was another surprise. There weren't as many surprises just because I kind of knew what I was going to expect. And that's kind of the way it turned out. I guess I will say another thing that maybe should be said. Internet is not caught up to Lombok yet.
Okay.
It is very unreliable. If anything surprised us, it was how poor internet coverage was on the island compared to places like Bali. Bali doesn't have perfect internet, but there are places to go for that.
So a better place if you're trying to get a break from the internet than if you're trying to be a remote worker.
Exactly.
Today, at least. Okay.
Or a travel blogger.
Or a travel blogger.
Really, really terrible to be in a place where you can't get internet. One place that we found, and for a long time I wanted to keep it a secret in case we come back, but one place we stayed near Senggigi, that Senggigi Beach area in the west, is just your average guest house called White Rose. It's run by a retired British fisherman safety officer guy. Really interesting story with him and his Indonesian wife. But he has spent a lot of money and time to get routers and all of this from Jakarta. And he had the most reliable internet of anywhere we stayed in 5 weeks. The place is called White Rose. If you need internet, I would go to this guy.
Excellent. Anything else we want to tell people before we get to our last three questions?
No, I think we can go on.
Okay. You're standing in the prettiest spot that you saw in all of Lombok. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I'm standing at that Teocalep, at the waterfall.
Okay.
The one that we talked about before. We only went once, and I really wish we had made time to go again. We like waterfalls, and this was one of the most beautiful waterfalls I'd ever seen.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Lombok.
I would say the glass bottles of gasoline.
Oh, okay. Sold on the side of the road or?
Sold on the side of the road, but I guess that you would also see that in Bali. But have to get my tank filled by a bottle of Absolut with unleaded in it.
Sure. Yeah. No, we've seen that a couple different places around the world, but it is one of those developing world sort of things that strikes you as strange if you haven't spent a lot of time there.
Another is chocolate syrup in my dragon fruit juice, which we've never seen anywhere else. You're familiar with dragon fruit?
I am familiar with dragon fruit, yep. Not with chocolate syrup, though.
The white flesh ones that I had eaten before I went to Southeast Asia, the ones I had in the States and elsewhere were fairly flavorless. Then we moved to Malaysia, and there's this fuchsia red fruit. Have you seen this one?
I've seen it rarely.
There's a lot of places in Southeast Asia have it. It's very flavorful. It's very delicious. And my son is one of his favorite fruits, and he tries to have juice with it anywhere we go. We ordered it two or three different times, and they put chocolate syrup in it. And we finally had to start telling them, no chocolate syrup in our dragon fruit juice, please.
Okay. I wouldn't have expected that. And if you had to summarize Lombok in just three words, what three words would you use?
Wild, green and blue, I think. Mm-hmm. That's basically all of my photos. When I look at them, they're all just different shades of green and blue.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again has been Jason Andrew Jenkins. And Jason, where can people read more about your travels?
I run a travel blog called anepiceducation.com. And then I also have a podcast called Epic Education Radio, where I talk about family travel and living abroad with a kid.
Excellent. Well, and I should say, not only were the other three blogger podcasters we were meeting with in San Miguel travel podcasters, but they were also family travel podcasters. I was the odd man out there, I think, in that particular meetup. But
that's right.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming back on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us this time your love for Lombok, Indonesia.
The pleasure was all mine, Chris. Thank you.
I think with that, we'll end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. I should say I'm looking for new episode ideas, so if you have an episode to pitch me, this is a great time. Join the Facebook group, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, for more of a conversation, or amateurtraveler.com/trips if you want to hear more about the trips we're doing this year and next. And as always, thanks so much for listening.